Welcome to the O Woman Podcast, where we discuss so many things about women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships, to our orgasms, to our children, and our ovaries, and we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. Welcome to the show today. This is episode 36. Today we're talking about creating a birth plan, and I have my first guest with me today, my friend Jen. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, it's great to be here.
It's great to have you. So Jen is visiting my house today with her daughter Hattie, who just turned 10 months yesterday, and I was actually present at the birth of Hattie. It was fantastic and awesome, and Jenny did a natural water birth, and so I wanted to interview her a little bit about her different experiences with the natural birth. If you can hear Hattie, she's kind of breathing in the background, making funny noises. No, I just tried to hold the mic up to her, but she didn't cooperate. Anyway, I wanted to interview her about her experiences from the beginning, pregnancy, and then through the end, through the birth and the labor. So today we're starting with creating a birth plan. Oh, there she is. You can hear in the background. So the first thing we wanted to talk about is, what is a birth plan, actually? Because some people don't even know what that is. Jenny, what is a birth plan?
A birth plan is a way to think about what you want to happen during your birth and something that you would give to a doctor or midwife, anyone who's going to be with you at the birth, to make sure things happen the way you want them to. For example, if you're having a hospital birth, your birth plan might say, you know, that you do not want drugs during your labor. You don't want an epidural, or that you want one. You know, it just depends on what you're going for, and also like what you want to happen to the baby once the baby's born. Like, would you like the baby to receive the, you know, standard eye ointment, antibiotic eye ointment, and, you know, do you want the baby's cord cut immediately, or would you rather prefer delayed cord clamping?
Delayed cord clamping.
And those sort of things, just to make sure that things happen the way you want, because obviously when you're in labor, you might not be able to discuss things the way you would in any other normal situation when you're not having a physical demand on you. And that's it in a nutshell, I suppose.
Yeah, that was a really perfect way to describe it. So it's really just a way to kind of cover your bases and make sure that you're getting everything out of the experience that you want. Like, you and your partner decide on what you want to do, and making sure that other people stick to it. Even though some people consider these other folks, you know, midwives, doctors, nurses, to be like the experts, still it's your choice. So you should be able to have what you want. And so the birth plan is part of that, is saying, this is what I want to stick to. So please respect my wishes. It's my body. It's my experience. Right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, it's just, you know, it's,
hold on. Hattie's going for the cord in the wall. Let's take a short break to, only on this interview and this podcast will you actually hear the baby of which we're speaking involved in the interview instead of just, you know, staying at home. So what exactly then, you kind of alluded to it when you were talking earlier about it, but why do a birth plan? It's basically just to protect your idea of what you want for your birth, right?
Right. It's a birth plan in my mind, the reason I wanted to have one, was to avoid being pestered by people, really, like asking me for things or pushing things on me that I knew I did not want, or, you know, just so they understood what I was going for, so that my experience would be what I wanted, and to make it to minimize the stress, because it's a new experience. It's a little scary, I suppose, and it's just good to be able to go through it with everyone around you understanding what you're trying to accomplish.
And we should note here, too, that Hattie was Jen's first baby. So this is a really great experience in talking about first births, because it can be really different having your first baby from having your second or your third baby, because you've already gone through it. So this is from the standpoint of a new mom, first-time mom, which is, I mean, everybody's a first-time mom at one point if they're ever a mom. So it's great to start off talking about that. So I know that not all women actually do birth plans. And it's pretty important, according to you, Jen, and then also I completely agree with that, too, that it would be something because it protects you and your idea of what you want. But why do you think some women don't actually do birth plans?
I think some people have, a lot of women have fear about birth, and because it's a novel experience, not something you do on a daily basis, or maybe only a few times in your whole life. So, and it can be a very physically challenging, and occasionally there are serious problems. So I think people are scared, and they want to just trust that the doctor, whoever is going to be helping them, that they'll know best what to do. And so they can, I guess, in their mind, relax, thinking that someone else is going to take care of any problems and that they know best what needs to happen. I think another reason why people don't create a birth plan is because they don't really understand that there are choices to make during birth, during labor and birth, and they haven't really done much research to see what they might want or not want to happen. Because they just want to trust their medical professional, whoever there is there at their birth, to just make those choices for them.
Yeah, which is, that's not something that you did at all. You and your husband did a whole lot of research and decided that there were some things that doctors may or may not push on you that you didn't agree with, actually, and you didn't think they were the healthiest thing at all. And so that's why you were really specific about your birth plan, because you knew that some of the choices that might have been pushed on you weren't going to be right for you and for your decisions. But one thing you said earlier about women kind of being scared of the process, And I think you were pointing out how that's not the same thing as being nervous. Being scared isn't the same thing as being nervous because it's your first time thing. But there is a lot of fear surrounding birth in general, not just natural birth. And I think one of the big reasons for that is because no one sees birth happen anymore. Like, you might see, I mentioned this in the previous podcast I did about just the interview to natural childbirth, but that you might see it once in your life if you're lucky, if your friend or your sister invites you to come into the delivery room, but you don't see it or hear it on a regular basis because your sister and your mom and all the other family members in a community of women actually help each other. That doesn't happen anymore. So there's not the understanding that it is going to be okay. And you do have control, and you do have a lot of power in it. You just, it's kind of a mysterious secret thing.
Right. That you go to the hospital for. It's a medicalized thing where you need a medical professional helping you, and, you know, no one else should be involved because you might be in danger and need help from, you know.
The natural thing that your body's naturally doing.
Right.
As if your body doesn't know.
Right. And that's sort of a faulty way to think of it. And there are, you know, times when you do need medical intervention, but for most women having a healthy pregnancy, a birth is, you know, it's pretty normal.
It's something like 10% or less, right? The average woman who's considered healthy before the pregnancy, I think that was in that Ina May Gaskin book, the statistic about how few actual necessary interventions happen in cases like that. And a lot of the interventions that happen are ones that are unnecessary because it was maybe forced upon the woman, or the woman didn't know all the information going into it or something like that.
Right.
So when you were setting up your birth plan, what were some of the things that were important to you? Like the setting for the birth, who could be there, the interventions that you were going to allow with Hattie when she was born or not. Well, first of all, Jen had her baby in a birth center. So that's the setting. So why'd you pick that?
For me made a huge difference, and actually ended up not really needing to do a birth plan because I knew that what they wanted to do there was exactly what I wanted for my labor and birth experience. But I went overdue, what you would call overdue,
yeah,
I guess.
Quote unquote overdue.
11 days past my baby's due date, and there was a snowstorm, and at one point I thought I needed to prepare to have to go to the hospital since we wouldn't be able to drive all the way to the birth center in the snow. And I, at that point, scrambled to actually do a written birth plan. And
you were really nervous about that. You were thinking, oh my God, I hope that I actually can get to the birth center because that's where I feel safe.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure what doctor I might have and what their opinion of natural birth might be and what their standards are. So I decided, okay, I need to make a birth plan and ask for some other women's advice in doing that too. But the things that I put on my particular birth plan had to do with, you know, being offered medication during the labor process and wanting to not receive an epidural. To not be offered that at all unless I requested it, which I wasn't planning to do at all, but I just didn't want anyone to even mention it, because it would stress me out, and, you know, I just wanted to be in the moment and not have people pushing things on me like that. I wanted to be able to move around freely and not be given a IV, like it's standard procedure in a hospital that you have to have an IV, and which restricts your movement, obviously.
And the only reason they put that in, right, is in the bizarre case of having an actual emergency,
right,
you're already set up and ready to get drugs put into your system to have a surgery, which there aren't that many emergencies, so why would they need to prepare for that in advance unless they're thinking it's going to happen because they're used to making it happen.
Right.
Or letting it happen, kind of.
Yeah, and a lot of times they'll tell you that you don't actually have a choice, that, you know, this is standard procedure and you have to have this done. The nurse will say that to you, but you do have a choice and you can decline whatever treatment options that they give you or tell you that you must have. You actually have a choice.
Yeah. A woman that I used to work with who was a nurse, or I used to work with her husband, she was a nurse and she decided to do a natural birth without any drugs or an epidural or anything at the women's hospital. So it was in a hospital, but it was a midwife with her and she was doing it in a tub and stuff like that. And when she got there, even though she was a nurse, they didn't know that because she was a nurse at a different place. They said to her, no, you have to have the IV, even though the midwife that she'd worked with who worked at that hospital said, no, you don't have to. And so she just, strangely, she was like, okay, fine, I'll just take the IV until my midwife comes and tells them to kiss their own butts. Well, I'm surprised she didn't say, no, I'm a nurse at another hospital. I know the rules. I know I can say no. You know, but when her midwife came in who worked at that hospital, she like literally pulled the IVs out of her arm and was like, what are they doing? And just ripped them out of her arm and said, they told you couldn't have any food? Get this woman a sandwich. Like, she should be eating right now. She requested it.
And that's another important thing is like, if, you know, and you might put in your birth plan that you want to be able to eat and drink, which, you know, in early labor, you can still eat and drink, you know, it's just a, you know, you need to keep your energy up because it's a very physically challenging experience. And like, just like any other thing, like running a race, you're going to need to eat well beforehand and drink water. And the reason they ask you not to eat and drink at the hospital is in case of an emergency C-section in which you might, vomit and cause a problem if you have like a breathing, like a tube, you know, down your throat.
Yeah. So it's not about the birth experience at all. It's about the potential maybe problems that might happen.
Right.
So they overlook the how important the experience is itself.
Right. It might actually hinder your birth natural experience and make you need some help when you wouldn't have. Yeah.
So then how many people then were you, did you say anything in your birth plan or did you just communicate with the midwives in advance about who could be in the room or who was there, first of all? I mean, I know I was there. I was very excited to be there. And so was your husband. So who else was there? And then what was your understanding of how that would work, of people coming in and and leaving and talking to you and that kind of thing?
Right. Well, the birth center where I went, you know, they let you tell them what you want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a standard way of doing things, and they give you sort of a questionnaire to make sure that you're on board and that if you want anything different that you could let them know. But, you know, choosing who you want present during your labor and birth experience to me was very important because I knew that I wanted to be as calm and relaxed as possible because the more I read about birth and labor, the more I could tell that like your mental state during the process
is so important.
Yes.
It dictates the entire experience pretty much.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so you want to feel safe. You want to feel at home. And it's hard to do that in a hospital. And
with the bright lights and all the noises and coming and going and talking. And
right. It's kind of a scary place. And if you've ever been there, you've probably been there because you were having a problem. So like, you know,
it
might trigger memories of being in a, I mean, you know, you just want to minimize, any distractions or stressful things. And so picking people that you want to be there is so important. You want to choose people that are people that make you feel calm or safe and that you know are going to be supporting your choices. If you want a natural birth, like you need someone that isn't expecting you to get an epidural.
Yeah.
If your mom doesn't want you to have a natural birth and it scares her and she wants you to have an epidural, she's not the person to have at your birth. And even though she's your mom.
Yeah. Even though she's going to maybe guilt trip you into thinking she should be there or.
Right.
You know, you can still say no. You're the mother. You can say, everybody kiss my ass. Everybody leaves. You can say whatever the hell you want.
Right.
I mean, I remember saying that to you when I showed up, you know, because at one point Jen kicked me out, which was like totally fine. And afterwards she was like, I'm so sorry. I kicked you out. During the experience, I was like, I don't care. Like I could have driven there and I could have gotten there like right after your water broke and you could have said, go home, bitch. And I would have been like, okay, well, that hurt my feelings, but I understand you're in a different state right now and you get to make all the rules. It's your thing. It's you and your husband. You get to do what you want.
Right. Yeah. And so I chose to have my husband there and Emma and, a photographer who was also a very good friend of mine. And, you know, obviously the midwives or nurse or whoever. And you know, I knew my husband could handle it. He was excited about it. I knew he'd stay calm and he would be like, my support person, and he did a great job of that.
He did a really great job, yeah. And he was really on board with all of it, too, even though his dad is a doctor, right? And so you were worried at first about, at the very beginning, would he be okay with it, kind of? Or at least would his family be okay with the idea of the natural birth?
Right. And I think a lot of men struggle with it because they, birth is a woman's experience, and so they don't have anything, they don't really understand it very well unless they read about it or talk about it. And so I think most men are most likely to say, of course we want to be in the hospital. What if something goes wrong? Because they feel sort of helpless in the experience, I think, in a lot of ways.
I think that makes sense.
And for them, like, the thing that they can do to make it a safe experience is to make sure that you're at a hospital. I think in a lot of men's mind, that's what...
Yeah. Well, and plus, they're going to witness you be in, you know, pain of some sort or discomfort of some sort. And it's the classic, you know, husband slash partner slash dad thing to be like, let's fix the problem. How do we fix the problem? And it might be the thought that you fix the problem by numbing the problem or, you know,
right.
for the average person to think that that makes sense.
Right. But in natural birth experience, like the man actually, the husband or partner is, you know,
part of
extremely important to helping physically support you and push on your back in certain ways and, like, you know, remind you to breathe and take deep breaths and help you move in different positions or, you know, talk to you, encourage you. Like, they're extremely important.
That would actually be a great, I just thought of a great, another interview we should do in the future about talking about the kind of a partner that you really should deserve or should request of your husband to be during a natural birth experience.
Right.
Because if you're going to have someone who's going to wig out, you need also a backup person who's not going to wig out.
Yes.
Like, if you know he's
so
a wig out person.
I mean, you rely on that person.
Like, so very much. I know you told me you focus on his voice so many different times and the things he was saying to you, different things like that. So, yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So also, I know that you did a lot of research about, like you mentioned earlier, delaying cutting the umbilical cord.
Right.
And different things about, like, what kind of shots or drops in eyes or things the baby should get after it. What did you decide on? What did you learn?
So the other part of a birth plan is dealing with the baby once it's born. And, you know, some decisions you might want to make are, you know, do you want the cord to be cut immediately or do you want delayed cord clamping to allow the baby to get all of the blood circulated into its body? Do you want the baby put on your chest right away so that it can have, you know, warm skin? I mean, it's used to being in your body for 9.5 or 10 months, and then all of a sudden it's, like, thrust into the world at once, you know, the baby, it's less shocking if the baby's, like, held close to you and it's allowed to breastfeed right away and start working on that. You know, eye ointment is a standard hospital procedure where they put eye ointment.
So why do they do that?
It's antibiotic eye ointment, and I think it's to prevent infection. If you have some sort of, like, vaginal infection while the baby's being born, it might contract some bacterial infection from the mother. But if the mother's healthy, then it's actually, they've been doing some studies now showing that a vaginal birth allows the baby to get natural bacteria from the mother, and it helps, like, create a healthy gut bacterial environment.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because that is a good bacteria place.
Your immune system, yeah. I mean, it's actually really important. It can clog the baby's eye ducts too to have eye ointment.
Well, and just subject it to an antibiotic right when it comes into the world is probably a whole nother shock on its system. It needs to be given the chance to learn how to fight off bacteria and some things on its own so its immune system can function properly, like you said.
Right. And, you know, most people don't have a vaginal infection.
Yeah, and you would probably know if you do.
They test for that. So it's something that you don't have to have. Anyway, and also, it's standard to give the vitamin K vaccine, which vitamin K can also be taken orally.
Mm-hmm. And what does that even do?
It's to prevent, a problem with bruising and, like, a bleeding issue. There are some babies, it's like one in, I don't know, 200,000. I can't remember the exact
numbers. A lot that would need it.
So many babies might be born with, like, a vitamin K deficiency and have, like, a traumatic birth that causes bruising, and they can have, like, a brain bleed and bleed to death. But it's so uncommon. It seems silly to me to have a vaccine when you can just give your baby vitamin K orally. And I know that, you know, a lot of babies spit up, and I think for the hospital, it's a liability issue of they know that the vaccine has been given. They don't have to worry about the baby spitting it up. It's a convenience and, liability issue for them to give every baby. And I'm sure maybe it does save a few babies' lives, but I think if you can give your baby oral vitamin K, you know, that seems like a good choice.
Yeah.
Also.
Instead of sticking them with a needle right when they come out.
Right. And, yeah. you know, a lot of times they'll take the baby right away and start weighing it and doing vital signs.
And sometimes they'll take it to a separate room a lot of the times in the hospital.
Right. And then later on, like, do you want the baby to stay in the room with you if you're at the hospital? Yeah. Or are you okay with the baby going to the nursery? And that means that you don't have control over.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll feed baby formula in the nursery.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding.
Without even asking permission. Because sometimes, I guess you never explicitly said no formula, so they assume they can perhaps do what they'd like.
Right.
And oh my God. No, that I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a choice you need to make, and you need to make sure everybody's clear on it. And sometimes your birth plan can get ignored, which I've heard about. So it is something important that you need to give to not only your husband or whoever, your partner during the birth, but also like your midwife or nurse. You need to like give it to everybody and make sure that
it's very clear.
Right, because you're not going to be able to to enforce it, really. You're going to be completely occupied, and it's a stressful experience, you know, in nature. So you might not be able to make those choices at the time. You want to make them before you go in so that whoever's with you to support you can help and ensure that those choices are honored.
And so what's the big thing about the umbilical cord delayed clamping? I know what it is, but I want you to explain it and why that is so much better than clamping, than cutting the umbilical cord right when the baby comes out. It has to do with blood, right?
Right. So from what I've read, the reason you might want to delay cord clamping is so that the cord, once the baby's born, the cord, you know, leads to the placenta, which is the gateway between the mother's body and the baby's body. And there's like a barrier there. Like the baby's blood is not mixed with the mother's blood. There's like a separation there, but that's how the baby gets all the nutrients and everything. And when the baby's first born, the cord continues to pulse. Like it's like, it's got arteries and veins and, you know, it's how the baby gets all its nutrients. It continues to pulse, and pumps, nutrients and blood into the baby.
And all of its own blood, it needs to reabsorb it.
Right.
Through the umbilical cord, right?
You know, if you clamp the cord, cut the cord right away, the baby may not have been able to absorb all of the blood that it needs, and a lot of times can cause anemia if it's clamped too quickly and other problems.
So why did you choose natural birth? I know the reasons. And beyond the fact that you and I believe that it's far superior for all reasons, why do we believe that it's far superior to a medicalized birth where so many interventions are included unless it's not necessary or unless it's necessary? Why did you choose that?
I chose natural birth for so many reasons. It's hard to really sum it up in just a few sentences.
It's like a way of thinking about the world even.
Right. Yeah. But the most important reason that I chose it is because after all the research that I did, I could see that it would be the most healthy option for my child. I felt like it would be the safest option for my child and for me. And that was really the most important factor in my decision.
Yeah. So after you planned the birth plan and you experienced the birth, looking back on it, how closely did your birth plan and your idea for what you wanted line up with what actually happened in your experience?
I felt like my birth went exactly the way I wanted it to go. I had so many people tell me to prepare for needing interventions and having problems. Like I had, you know, I don't know, on Facebook I posted a few weeks before my birth, I said, you know, I'm trying to do natural, like does anybody have any advice? Like, and I had several people privately message me and say, you know, be prepared for it to go wrong. And I was planning on a natural birth, and this is what happened. I ended up with a C-section. Just be open-minded and prepare yourself emotionally for that, which I guess is good advice. But, it was a little discouraging, too.
Because you weren't looking for that kind of advice. You were looking for advice about how to cope with and get through some of the stuff that happens during a natural birth,
not just
thinking, oh, no. You know, an intervention, when an emergency happens, of course, do it. But you weren't thinking like, oh, it's hurting a lot. Can we get an intervention? You weren't hoping to go down that route at all.
Right. But it was just amazing. Like, I felt like I had done so much research, and I had read so many birth stories, and I'd read so many books about, like, actual births, and I'd watched videos just knew exactly what stage of labor I was in. When I was in it, I was able to, like, predict how many centimeters dilated I was based on like how I was feeling and what was happening. And I just felt like I was really educated about the process and that it really paid off because I didn't feel scared. You know, I felt supported. I was in the right environment. I chose, like, the people that were attending me and the people that I wanted there very well. And just everything went exactly as planned. And Heidi was healthy. And
she's healthy now. We're changing a poopy diaper.
It was a beautiful experience. It went even better than I could have imagined. It was amazing.
It was amazing to watch. I remember, like, just crying when I could see her crowding to crown. Everyone else in the room was like, oh, yes, she's crowning. Let's focus on this. And I was, like, standing in the back kind of going, like, like, it was just so fantastic. I, like, couldn't even describe it.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. It was like this, I mean, it's so rare that, you know, you get to bring life into the world. And it was...
And to do it in such a way that was such low impact on your body and on Hattie, it was just, you know... To be able to actually, like, you were, after the birth, you were like, okay, well, we'll stay here for a while, and then we'll go home, you know, fine.
Yeah, it was just so cool. I mean, I just felt, I was just so overjoyed to have, like, this little baby, and that, you know, she was healthy. Everything went smoothly, and that's really what all I could have hoped for, and I felt great.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Oh, there you go. We're hearing a little bit from Hattie. All right. So, well, this is part one of the interview that I'm doing with Jen that it talks a lot about childbirth, pregnancy, through the different stages. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. As always, I love talking to you guys. Just a reminder, make sure that you enter the contest drawing for the $15 Adam and Eve gift card, and you do that by checking us out on Facebook, A Woman Podcast, and liking the page. And if I see that you've liked the page, you're automatically entered into the drawing. I also, on your honor, am going to trust you to have told someone else about the podcast. That's part of entering too, is promising me and yourself that you'll tell someone else about it so we can spread the word. But remember to do that by Christmas Eve for the first drawing, which will be on Christmas Day. And then if you miss that window, like the page before New Year's Eve, because that second drawing will be on New Year's Day. And check out more information at the website, awomanpodcast.com. Email me, emma@awomanpodcast.com, if you have questions, thoughts, ideas for a future episode. I will talk to you guys soon, and we'll be back for another interview with Jen. All right, bye.